OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties. One county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that gold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.
Whether you're from Cushendall in Antrim or Mount Sinai in Waterford, this is what it's all about.
And get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free, ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
Seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for Kelly for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course he would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Okay, you're very welcome along to this week's Golf Weekly. We have with us Fionn Davenport over in Manchester. Hello, Fionn.
Hey, Joe.
And Peter Lowry coming to us from one of the kids' bedrooms. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
We're doing very well. Fionn, we have much to discuss. Dustin Johnson, let's kick things off. Let's get right into this. Travelers Championship. We are now into week four of the PGA Tour. Week three was Dustin Johnson with win number 21 on the PGA Tour. Final round 67, 19 under. Depending on your definition of the season, people are complaining about the wraparound season or otherwise, but for the majority, that is 13 straight seasons where Dustin Johnson has won on the PGA Tour. Only Jack, Arnold Palmer and Tiger have longer streaks.
Oh, there's no doubt. It was deserved. The rest of the field fell away from him. What was in the end, despite the presence of some top players who didn't really contend on the last day, just DJ plus, you know, poor old Brendan Todd, Will Gordon. I was happy once I read the Will Gordon story. I was happy for him that he finished tied third. And despite DJ's best efforts on the closing holes to give it away, he didn't. He wrapped it up for a highly emotional 21st win of his career, where he was interviewed, and it was like he asked him. He was answering. It was like he was answering a question. Is like, what does that burger taste like? Yeah, no, yeah, it's really good.
DJ, this changes your life. This is it, man. 2 year exemption. You're going to the Masters.
Cheers. He was. I mean, look. Given that we, after the players' cancellation, the first time we saw DJ was in that charity match with Matthew Wolff and Rory, and he was awful. He was by far, as I read somewhere, I think it was on CBS Sports. It was like he redefined the term rusty. He just played terrible stuff, and he did fine. You know, I mean, he started kind of slowly enough with a 69, and like he was tied 79th, and then just accelerated away. And one of the things what was impressive was his driving for one thing, and his putting, but his driving. Oh, like other than, and I'm sure we'll talk about them, but his drive on 13 and his drive on 15. On Sunday. But like the drive he hit in the last on the 72nd hole, it was like just to put any end to any conversation about whether he would throw this away or not. He hit like a 75,000 yard drive that put him within just like a tiny little gap wedge. And it was just like, oh my God. And you realize the American, the Americans are interesting because the American golf columnists never shy away from saying this is arguably the most talented natural player there is of his generation. And but for whatever reason, you know, I mean, he's consistent, as you said, 13 years on the trot with a win, 21 in total, one major. The conversation with DJs always is like, well, why hasn't he won lots more, you know, for a guy of his talent?
But, well, I'm not sure. And there's a strange thing to say about someone who's won 21 times and a major. I get that. But we've said it before, and it's the reason he hasn't won more majors. I'm not sure how good he is under pressure. Like, he almost threw that away. I mean,
he did his best to throw it away.
He really did. This was his OB drive on 13. He said, I don't know what my tee balls were doing today. But like the 15th, that should have rolled into the water. Like, if we'll talk about the course later on. But I mean, if you're going to have a drivable par four and a bit of a bank, to let the grass grow up and stop the ball going in just felt a little bit too generous. I don't know how convincing Peter Dustin Johnson is. Again, ridiculous to say it maybe with 21 wins under his belt, but I'm never convinced by him under real pressure.
I agree with you. You know, he got himself in front. He had the tournament won. Then he tried to hand it back and he got lucky. Okay, he was a foot out of bounds on 15, or maybe not even a foot, a couple of inches out of bounds when 30, they drew the line. Was it not 15 that he hit it out of bounds? 13th.
15 was 13th. Where he hung on with the water.
Yeah.
Okay, and then he hit that shot on what was that, 3-wood that he hit left that should have went in the hazard but didn't?
Yeah, that was 15.
He didn't get it out, so that was 15, sorry. And then he hit a terrible shot on 6, the par 3, wasn't it? He missed the green right in the bunker on the restart and made bogey. So I agree with you. He's always give him an opportunity and he'll find some way to give it back to everybody and let them back into the tournament. So that has to be a nervous thing rather than a, you know, something else.
And it's happened at too many majors. You know, there was the US Open where he gave it away on the 18th hole. Even at the USPGA, was it last year at Bethpage, where as soon as he got back in contention, he inexplicably went over the back of the green. I mean, it was just a crazy shot and he put himself out of the tournament again. It's not even an execution thing so much, although Royal St. George's jumps to mind, as does Pebble Beach 2010. Okay, it's both. It's both. It's execution.
Well,
and he makes mental
mistakes. There's one Irish guy that wouldn't agree with us, though.
Yeah.
You know?
But
Shane Lowry, of course. He beat Shane down the stretch in that USPGA.
That was the day where, that is almost the exception that proves the rule. He was so convincing that day. And any day he's convincing or playing up to 90% of his standard, he generally should win because he is so good. But I don't think of him too often putting in that kind of 2016 US Open performance.
No, not even closer.
Was it the 3-putt that gave the US Open to Jordan Spieth? Oh my God, my memory. Yeah, I mean, one of the things is that for all of his natural ability, and he's unquestionably an inordinately talented golfer, his course management is diabolical. Like, he doesn't seem to have, maybe I'm exaggerating for effect, but he doesn't seem to strategize that well. Or he's the definition of the natural golfer. And he just seems, look, I hit it long and I putt and that's it. You know, give me the yardage, I'll get there. Like, he doesn't seem to have the interest, I won't say the ability, but he doesn't seem to have the interest in plotting his way around the course and kind of saying, look, this is the score I'm on. This is the score I need. I don't need to do anything more than that. And kind of negotiating a win. Like, he leaves it all up to the gods a bit.
But his best club in the bag is driver. Or it seems to be.
Mm-hmm. This week, putter as well.
Yeah.
He was in strokes gained putting. He was 10th on round 3 and 7th round 4. Like, he made some good putts.
He's an incredibly good putter,
He's a real as hell.
He shot a 61 on the Saturday. Like, he played sublime golf.
Oh, yes. You know, yeah.
Incredible. And Butch Harmon has said on TV commentary before that he always just, like, he doesn't really strategize. He just says, give me the driver, let's just blast it and go find it and play again. And that serves you well up to a point. In fact, it may serve you well for a huge percentage of your career. There's a a beautiful simplicity to it. But too often there are brain farts with them. And it's happened so often in the majors. Even if it, that USPGA where he grounded the club the year Martin Keimer won. Like there's a litany, in isolation, it sounds a bit harsh, you know, but actually he should have at least four more majors in the can.
I remember years ago on the pod, we quoted his college roommate who said, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the quote exactly, but if DJ wasn't so distracted, he would be the greatest golfer. Like he would be amongst the greatest golfers of all time.
Hmm. Well, I hope he hasn't tuned in thinking, well, I've just won, so I'm going to get a really nice few minutes. Just, right off the bat here, we have just slammed
I saw a lovely picture of him today, actually. Somebody tweeted it out there with Christy O'Connor Sr.
Yeah,
in Royal Dublin.
Shane O'Donoghue tweeted, Joe, up at the Walker Cup.
In 2007, yeah.
Amazing photo, yeah.
So,
I mean, as much as I think that on 13 he was he was a little bit unlucky. He went barely out of bounds and, you know, he just held on to it a little bit. But the one on 15 is an indictment of the course. I mean, I know you said it, Joe, but like traveling at that speed, hitting that bank and not plugging, there is no earthly reason that ball should not have been wet. Lucky for him, if you're a DJ fan, that's brilliant news for him because it stopped him, well, would have been bogey if not double. But like the idea that, as Nick Faldo said, traveling at 150 miles an hour, that it just kind of plops in the bank, it doesn't bounce, is just nonsense.
Hmm.
Like, why is the bank there? Why is the green, why is it a drivable par four with water right there?
Peter,
it's worse than Brad Couples in the Masters on the 12th.
Oh, yeah.
But, the Fred Couples thing is so amazing because that almost never happens. You know, whereas the grass looked on Sunday like it was up enough for that to happen relatively often. And I just thought that should be more punitive, especially on a Sunday. I don't know what the professional opinion of that is, Peter. Sometimes we do criticize the PGA Tour for being a bit too generous. I think that was the case this week. But that hole in particular, when it's a drivable par four, I'm not really sure what puts manners on the players there.
Did they do that for pace of play?
Maybe.
I wonder. You know.
He also, it's also worth the comment on the course, the way they set it up. He started in the lowest round position for an event winner on the PGA Tour since 1983.
Wow.
So it was easy scoring.
Yeah. I must say I very much enjoyed it though. I heard a lot of people saying it was too easy. And I agree with that. It was quite easy. And the front nine, the first few holes is just a wedge into each green, you know. And yet I thoroughly enjoyed it. I am more than happy for a couple of weeks in the year to be birdie fests and, you know, a test of wedge play. And I found that engaging as well. Come at me if we disagree with this. Am I a Philistine for saying this? Wow. I like birdies sometimes, all right?
Oh, well, funny enough, did anybody see the new, and let's promote them, Titleist, their Twitter thing about the ball, the completely round ball with no dimples? Have you seen that yet?
No.
Well, they got these pros to try a Titleist with no dimples on it. And the furthest anybody could carry it was 156 yards.
Wow.
So they were talking about without dimples, it's virtually impossible to play golf to such a high standard.
Mm.
So maybe there's a case when they talk about equipment, if just we had a ball for professionals, every golf course would become very, very difficult.
And what do you prefer watching? So I quite enjoyed a lot of this week. Now, I'm too much of anything week after week after week would get repetitive, but I had no problem, for instance, watching the McIlroy, DeChambeau and Mickelson group. Really enjoyed it. And all of them had wedges into a lot of greens and it was okay. Let's see who's got the best wedge game. And there was one great day where Phil, playing first on every fairway, emerged as the leader at the end of it. And I thought, that's really good. You know, you still have to get the ball in the hole. You still have to hit, you still have to, your wedge play still has to be sharp. Are you sitting there, Peter, thinking, oh, this is too samey? I want five irons in. I want different challenges. Or how did you find it?
No, I'd love to see greens where you have different plateaus where you have to land the ball on a certain plateau and it's very tight. So whether you go too long and you go way off or go short, you know, with spin and stuff like that. So that's the way I have no problem with guys hitting driver wedge, as long as they're very good wedge players. And I like to see birdies. So just I would make the greens a little bit more difficult to try and bring everybody together.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Joe. I like the variation. I mean, I have no problems with it being a birdie fest. And the course looks lovely. I thought it presented very well on camera. Mm. And because you know that the British Open presents X challenge, that the US Open presents that kind of challenge, and that you have different challenges is nice. And I agree. I enjoyed the Mickelson, DeChambeau and Rory three ball. I thought that was lovely. I just, you know what it is on the fourth day, other than a little bit of DJ drama, I just kind of, it was all a bit.
It lacked.
I mean, in fairness,
it lacked a bit of star power. It lacked a bit of star power. It just did. By the way, I mean, against my better judgment, and I feel like I should be ready to scoff at this, but I'm looking at Phil, aged 50, and I'm thinking, those sunglasses look amazing. Does Phil not look good?
He does, yeah. He looks the part. He's a cool dude. Simple as. He is the dude.
Those glasses are way better than the David Duval types that are synonymous with golf.
Oh, yeah. By a long shot. But there again, I think they were more for the look rather than what David Duval used to wear them for. David Duval used to be, he was exceptionally shy and he kept everybody out into his own bubble. Phil wants everybody to see him. Oh, there's a big difference.
I felt for him, I wanted him to perform over the weekend, but maybe as a 50-year-old, aren't they calling it the lefty fade? He shot 71-71. Yeah, I mean, look, what I like is his optimism. I like that. And the sunglasses, those gorgeous pants he was wearing on Sunday, like, they're so cool. I'm sorry. They are golf apparel and cool are absolutely polar opposites. They don't work. And yet, when Mickelson, this 50-year-old, you know,
the shirt that he was trying to wear for a while.
I like
remember
that
the shirt ad that he did?
I was fine with that as well.
But it's all part of this, like, Phil really believe, like, whatever it is, maybe there's a bit of cynical marketing about it, but he's presenting himself very, very well. And certainly Phil Mickelson fans won't tire of him too soon. This is a guy who's 50 years old. He mightn't have four really solid low round days in him at the moment, but man, he's exciting. Watching him on Friday and Saturday was exciting. You know, it was great. I want a pair of those trousers. I'm putting my hand up right now and saying, I am going shopping for those trousers.
When
his marketing ploy has worked.
DeChambeau hit a drive at one stage, a big drive, and Phil audibly and Mike just said, that's nasty. And I'm like, you're such a cheese ball, Phil, but like, funny. Yeah, yeah. It's funny.
But we would never hear that if there was galleries.
No.
I
really like golf now with the galleries. I really like watching it on TV because you can actually hear strikes, you can hear a little bit of what they say, you can hear the cursing, and I've played with so many guys and they are foul mouthed. But there's something interesting about that, you know, of how somebody reacts to a shot. You can hear nothing of that when there's galleries there.
I completely agree with you. I think I didn't mention it last week, but Adam Hadwin at the Charles Schwab, he had picked up what he thought was a pebble in the bunker behind his ball, but it turned out it was just sand. So he crumbled it in his hand. So he called a penalty on himself. He brought the umpire over, or the referee, and the referee confirmed that, sure, this is a two-shot penalty. So he was like, okay. And you could tell he was disappointed. He was in contention, but he was like, oh. And as the referee is walking away, and you would never have heard this if the galleries had been there, you can see the referee going, okay, thanks. And Adwin with a smile goes, screw you. I mean, thank you. Like this, the way he said it was funny. And it was really, it was just, wow, I'm actually observing how the golfers are, you know, how they respond to things. And yeah, I enjoy it a lot.
Brandon Todd then. Let's talk about Brandon Todd, because I do enjoy sometimes these PGA Tour nights where it's a Sunday and there is a lesser known player in the lead, sitting on a 2 or 3 or 4 shot lead. They've been sleeping on it and they've got real heat behind them and they're going out with somebody like Dustin Johnson. Because invariably they crack, and there is a sadistic side to me that enjoys that first 9 holes. Because I like, you're going to crack. I know you're going to crack. I know it's coming. And it's always a gas moment, okay?
Yeah.
But so Todd hung in there and he kept powering his way through. And then you hear more about his story and you realize he's come back from the yips. And now he's won twice. He's really come back from the yips. But I thought, oh, he's gonna hang in. Now, DJ had still taken control a little bit because he was playing more aggressively and had made some birdies. And then we get to the 12th, and if people didn't see it, they'll find it on YouTube. But he's greenside in regulation. He's greenside in 2, and he's got nasty-ish lie on the face of a bunker, ball below his feet. You know, there is, for amateurs, there would be jeopardy there for sure. And you still expect Todd, though, to stab it up on the green and have a 6-footer for par. And man, it's off the hosel. It's all the way, you know, and it's that moment. And he puts his hand to his mouth, you know, involuntarily. Oh, and then does that thing that the amateur would do, which is tries to put the ball back up the upturned saucer green. Ball rolls back to his feet. And I felt dirty. I had been willing this kind of, oh, we're going to see a guy crack moment. And it wasn't satisfying. It was terrible. And I don't know, Peter, explain it to me. Professional golfer, he's won twice in the last year. That was just, that was brutal.
Do you know, when I listen to this, and I probably haven't heard it before, I actually feel, Jesus, my run wasn't that bad. Because you listen to some guys, they miss 34 cuts out of 36. And I'm going, I never did that. And I thought I was bad when my time was, you know, when I was struggling. But when you have that power run going and you're in contention, you know there's a disaster. It's either going to go one way or the other. It's not going to go 18 pars. It's either go, when you make a mistake, it's going to be a bloody big mistake, or you're going to make a couple of birdies. And once he shanked it like that, you could just see, here comes the 7. And out of the tournament, it's all over and done with. And like, he was in prime position on the fairway. You know, to miss the green where he did was just terrible. You know, he short-sided himself the whole lot. But then, as you said, the shank that he made. Look, you could feel sorry for him, but he's won twice this year. He's come back. So I don't really feel sorry for him. You know, he's got over that phase. He's got his exemptions and stuff like that. The guys that I really felt great were the two guys who shot low numbers that Fionn was talking about there. Can't remember their names.
Bill Gordon.
He birdied the last to finish tied 3rd, which secured his playing rights pretty much for the end of this year and next year. And those are the stories that are spectacular. Brendan Todd had the story probably when he won his first tournament. Now he's just another, okay, a guy who's recovered. But the story was Gordon's story.
Absolutely, Will Gordon. I mean, poor old Brendan Todd was the unfortunate exemplar this week of the old golfing adage that two things that don't last that long is dogs that chase cars and pros that putt for par. He had no birdies. This is a guy started Sunday 18 under and had no birdies, not one, all day. And even if you ignore what happened on the 12th, he just couldn't get it going. Something happened. Took him 6 shots to get to the green on the 12th.
It's what makes golf so compelling, because I stuck it on the Sunday night when he was 2 clear. And I thought, this is like my perfect scenario. You know, it's a guy who has it in him to win, but he's now slept on a lead. He's going out with DJ. It's such an interesting test of personality. You know, and it's the most difficult sport. You still have to roll in the 4-footers every time. Like, it grates on you, it weighs on you. Nothing is kind of given to you. And I expected him not to win, you know, and I was kind of going, okay, let's see what you got here. But expecting him not to win, because you know how difficult it is, because so often we see this story repeat itself. You've got the bigger player behind you. You've slept on the lead. It's just incredibly difficult. For people who aren't familiar with the story, by the way, so last year he won the Bermuda Open, and he shot a 62 to win that. It was his first PGA Tour win in about 5 years. And before that, he had missed 37 of 41 cuts. He was about to buy a fast food franchise. He was done. You know, it was over. I'm going to run this fast food franchise. I've made a few quid. I'm getting out of the game. And he went to see Brad Hughes, the coach. And they did a number of things. I was reading a piece. I'm sure it's more complicated than this to fix the yips. But one of his big issues was he had a mega block right. And we've all been that soldier. We've all blocked the ball horribly right. And it's awful. So
I'm holding my hand up to this one.
Well, listen, I'm right behind you. We can find our balls together. The way Todd had tried to fix the mega block before was to keep the face more shut or more square, which is actually how many amateurs try to fix their slice. They believe if they shut the club, they can stop it from going over to the right. Unfortunately, this had the opposite effect. The more it shut, the more it had to open on the downswing, sending the ball over to the right. So the coach, Brad, fixed the block slice by opening the club on the backswing. So he opened the club on the backswing. As a result, he could open his club face in the backswing and then he could close it through impact. This liberated Todd to go as hard as he liked, harder and harder at the ball, rather than guiding it as he had been in the past. This completely eliminated the miss to the right and the rest is history. And I must say, like, Peter, you know more about the swing than Fiona or I, clearly. But I mean, if I was losing the ball right of a day, I probably wouldn't think to myself, I'm going to open the club face more on the backswing and then rip through it more. It's an interesting solution. Would you have gone with that solution?
No, it was certainly against what I was thought. And when I had that problem, and I did have that problem, I lost a lot of kind of block shots right underneath it. When I was coached like a little bottle drill where you'd put a bottle in front of the ball and you would try and get the ball to miss the bottle. So hence, you were never coming underneath it. You always had to come over the top of it. So you always got the ball to start left. But in his way, being open, you can actually release it and really not worry about it going right. So there was kind of two different trains of thought. Hmm. Obviously, I went for the wrong one.
Yeah.
In considering what he has done since then. But look, there's two different trains of thought, as I said, but it is something that most guys would struggle from is to get underneath it and there's nowhere to go. You can't square up the club face in time. And because you're putting so much power onto it, you know, you're hitting it with an open club face and the ball can only go one way.
Mm. Would many players open the club face on the backswing?
No, not really. Here's an example, actually. When Padraig Harrington started playing on tour, he hit everything with a little fade. He changed his total game to draw the ball with the driver. And how he did it was he addressed it with a wide open club face.
Hmm.
And that is another way of doing it. So he was able to release it and get, you know what I mean, from in to out and then square up the club face through impact. So there's so many different ways to do it, but not too many people would literally stand there and think, right, I'm going to keep this club face wide open.
Hmm. Yeah.
Two wrongs don't make a right normally.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Because it always struck me with that, you know, so if you've got a lot of club face rotation, your timing has to be really right. There's not much of a period where it's perfectly square before it's gone again.
No. And hence, he hits the ball quite short. So therefore, the club, he has a little bit of time to square it up in comparison to a Bryson or a DJ.
Hmm.
Like his drives are 270 at best out there. Which is remarkable in this day and age that he's still in contention on the golf courses that they play.
Hmm.
Like he couldn't reach the par fives when DJ was hitting an iron into the, maybe was he hitting five or six iron into the par fives?
Do amateurs tend to open, close, or open?
Oh, still? Very much so, yeah. The face moves a lot with an amateur. The rotation of the face is huge in an amateur. That's one thing that, you know, they could learn substantially from professional golfers. That there's not that big of a rotation.
And why are we doing that? What part of our body is taking over?
Mainly your hands. Majority of amateur golfers don't have enough flexibility to use their bigger muscles. So hence it's mainly arms and hands. And with arms and hands, there has to be a rotation.
Yeah. There's no way to play with your arms and hands and keep the club square for a long period of time, I would think.
It's virtually impossible to get any distance either.
Hmm. There you are, Fionn. We're screwed.
Well, I am anyway. My one is I cast from the top. I tend to come over the top. That's my one. I used to play with a couple of pros years ago when I was learning, and they kept making this like joke that I didn't understand at the time. They're like, gone fishing, are you? Like this, they'd say to me, I'm like, and then little mutter amongst themselves and then walk on. But they would never tell me what it meant until I found out years later.
Peter, in the likelihood that amateurs, especially as we all increasingly get older and spend more time sitting at desks, in the likelihood that we're not going to develop massive flexibility all of a sudden, and we are going to have to play a lot with our arms and hands, is that just something maybe at a point we should all just embrace, you know, and try and get really skilled with the hands? And, you know, you get the sense Phil Mickelson uses his hands and is very with his hands all the time. Like,
But he has his big muscles working for him as well. Sure.
But if we don't have the option, what do we do?
There's only a small amount you have to do. It's not a case of, you know, doing huge exercises to get yourself a little bit more flexibility in the top half. You know, you don't have to be in a gym or anything. You can do small little exercises at home every morning, and it'll certainly get you a little bit more mobility, let's say.
Mm. Does this not, Peter, does this not play into Harrington's tips where he's like, look, you shouldn't be listening to any lesson that applies to pros, to elite players, because, work with what you have.
Yeah, one of Porrick's best tips, right, is to hold your finish. And you get any amateur to try and hold their finish in the first, you say to an amateur, I want you to hold your finish after hitting that ball. They can't do it because they don't have the stability to go, you know, hold the finish. And the more you can do that, the more stability you'll have in your swing and the less handsy and armsy you will be.
That's a really good point.
Who was the best, highest achieving, handsy professional?
You'll have to go back to, you know, I would say you have to go back a little bit in time, because handsy, you had to be kind of handsy because of the equipment that they used. Mm. But in like day to day, now, modern day or older day?
Modern day. Is there anyone now that you'd say he's a handsy player and he's in the top world's top 50?
Wow. You're probably going to probably DJ. He's got more movements going on than most.
Right. Because people would say about DJ, the TV commenters say it all. The TV commentary say it all the time. Oh, look at DJ. He gets the top bowed wrist and he just turns.
Yeah, but do you ever see his impact position? Do you know what I mean? There's definitely a bit more there with his hands.
Right.
It's a tough one. Danny Willett was exceptionally handsy. He's not in the top 50 now anymore, but with he won
early,
the match.
His early wrist break.
Yeah. Cabrera, handsy. You can go through a few and get handsy.
Hmm.
Alvaro Quiroz was exceptionally handsy, but he's fallen off the planet. They don't have... You'd be surprised. The handsy guys don't have longevity.
Right. Interesting.
Are you handsy, Joe?
I wouldn't like anyone to comment on what I am. It's not good. So Bryson DeChambeau is on a run, Fionn, of five straight top tens. He's playing again this week.
Yeah.
The man's a machine. He's playing 4 weeks in a row. So he's
lowest score to par.
And he's
lowest score to par of everybody.
He's averaging 320 yards off the tee, and he's playing again this week. So you've been reading up on a bit of Bryson.
Yeah, so his diet, for anyone interested, is for breakfast, he has 4 eggs, 5 pieces of bacon, toast, and 2 protein shakes. Then at midday, he has a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and to quote him, a Go Macro bar here and there, which means at least 2 Go Macro bars. And then when he's playing, he has 2 shakes mid-round or every 6 holes. That's 2 shakes every 6 holes. He snacks, didn't quite specify what his snacks were after he's practiced. And then for dinner, he has steak and potatoes and 2 more shakes.
Jesus, it's a lot of protein.
It's like, I think they added it up. I think it's like over 4,000 calories and or 4,000 calories. Yeah, he's put on 30 pounds. And as we saw, I mean, his scoring averages are incredible. I think he's like 563,000 under par. You know, no, whatever it is. He's got like, I think he's like, is either 84 or 48, one of the two numbers, under par for the 4 or 5 events he's played or since.
Surely this has to be dangerous.
He says, so I've been doing a little extra reading, and not to contradict what I said originally when we first talked about it, which is I do think that he risks injury when you make such a sudden and dramatic change to your physiognomy. But he's saying is that one of the main reasons, besides just length, is to protect a weak back, that he's building muscle to protect a weak back.
Right.
And it's a bit like, do you remember Rory years ago justified all the heavy workouts that he was doing, again, building up muscle so that to protect his back from potential injury. So that's one of the things he's saying. I mean, he eats like a pig, you know, there's no two ways of putting it.
Never mind his back. What about his liver, his kidneys?
Yeah.
Going through all that protein.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look it. He's clearly, as we said at the time, this is a guy, he's no fool. Whether one thinks it's mad or not, there's one thing everybody can agree on. DeChambeau's a smart guy. He's an analytical type. He's clearly made a list of pros and cons and went, this is the route for me. This is the thing I need to do. And irrespective of longevity, I mean, there is the argument that this is a guy, over the next 5 years, he could make so much money. And I still think, like, beforehand he wasn't an amazing putter beforehand. He looks like an even uglier putter now. Peter, I'm gonna defer to you, because when I look at that kind of blocky way that he puts, it seems to lack feel. And I always think that the best putters all have feel, and however way they get the ball in the hole, they use feel to. And he just seems to use just, I don't know. I mean, look it. Having said all of that, his rounds are so good and his scores are so good, even though he hasn't won, but he's had, is it all top fives?
Top tens.
They're top tens. Like, clearly he's doing something right. So, I don't know. What do you think?
Look, putting is such an individualistic art. You can use anything and get the ball in the hole. It's something that you wouldn't turn out and teach somebody how to do it. But I think he's got it to a stage where he's very comfortable with what he's doing, and he seems to know what he's doing. And like I would say to anybody putting, if you have firm belief in what you're doing and firm belief in the line that you've chosen, you have more chance of getting the ball in the hole than if I teach you how to do it the normal, correct way.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say about his putting, really. It's just for him. He's comfortable with it, and therefore let him go ahead with it.
I mean, in strokes gained putting, he's 23rd. So that's pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Especially for how long he hits it now.
Yeah. That's good. They're in Detroit this week, by the way. It's the Rocket Mortgage Classic, no less. The field is not quite as stellar as it had been for the first 3 weeks back on tour. Donald Ross is the architect. Donald Ross, famously 400-odd courses designed between 1900 and 1948, including Pinehurst No. 2, Eastlake, Seminole, Oakland, etc. DeChambeau was saying it's fairly tight, a lot of rough. I think there's a lot of bunkers that are like 290 yards. So hopefully I'll just clear those and take, take those out of play. So sorry, Mr. Ross, but you know, it is what it is. And traditionalists started literally pulling out their hair when they heard that. Sorry, Mr. Ross.
That's pretty funny. That is pretty funny. Yeah. And like, but there's a reason, like, I mean, obviously they've Pinehurst is still a course, but that Seminole course that they played on, they couldn't have tournaments there. No. And I know, because I was talking to a friend of mine who said it's an unbelievable course and he's played it a couple of times, but there's a reason why they don't play pro tournaments there. It just doesn't have the length.
McIlroy admitted as much after that charity match.
What did he say?
Well, he just said, look, probably the length we're hitting it. Yeah. It's, you know, you're not, but I think he might have said, I don't want to misquote him. I think he said, you know, put my dad out here and it's just the most amazing golf course. So he's the favorite, Bryson DeChambeau. Webb Simpson is back. He's playing. Hideki Matsuyama is there. Victor Hovland, who, by the way, is driving around. He's not flying, Victor Hovland. He's driven the 700 miles from Connecticut to this tournament. 11-hour car rides.
6 Red Bulls.
He's doing his own thing. So Victor Hovland's there. Patrick Reed is there. Ricky Fowler's there. It's still a very good tournament. Tyrrell Hatton, etc. And the only Irish interest is Seamus Power. He was on the show a couple of weeks back. So he's missed his two last starts on the Corn Ferry Tour. He's missed the cut, but he has got himself a PGA Tour invite for this week. So hopefully he can muster something up. These are kind of the weeks if you're Seamus Power. You have to strike gold. You have to have a good week. You have to try and get into next week. Yeah, you pretty much do. That's the what's on you. On the positive tests front, Harris English withdrew on Monday, and then Chad Campbell, he was first in reserve, but then he had to go into 2 weeks isolation because he tested positive on Tuesday. And then Dylan Fratelli tested positive prior to getting on a PGA Tour plane as well. So this is kind of rumbling and happening. A few of the players, including McIlroy and I think Shane Lowry, came out and they feel the media are being too critical of this, that like, look, there are going to be positive tests and we're not shutting the whole thing down because of that, you know?
Well, also, when you consider that the US has just broken its record for tests in single day, you know, it's single day testing across the board. Now, I realize that it's focused on certain states like Texas, and Florida broke its own record. But absolutely, and I think they're right in that instance. Is if you're going to have a couple of positive tests, that's just the price of doing business, and it's not reason to shut it all down. Having said that, now just on observation, me sitting on my couch watching it on television, at the Travelers, they were much better behaved, certainly in front of the cameras, than they were the week before at the Charles Schwab. I didn't see any repeated broaching or breaching of the social distancing restrictions. The players seem to behave themselves. I mean, I don't know how much spitting DJ did, but I didn't see any. But yeah, it seems as though, if anything, that Jay Monahan's creed occur, please, guys, please, there's so much money at stake. The sponsors, we can't afford to shut this down. Jay Monahan...
Huh? Sorry for interrupting you, but talking about the money there, Fiona, you know the way they have to test at home now if they take a week off?
Yes.
So if they buy into this testing at home and they test positive, they get $75,000 for the week. If they go to the tournament and they test positive, they get $75,000. The caddies... they've increased the caddy fee now. If they test positive at the tournament or test positive at home, they get $5,000 for the week. It's incredible, the money.
Well, I mean,
doling out.
But I would imagine, I mean, surely that's paid out of an insurance pot, and which suggests that the kind of insurance premiums they're paying are massive. And it's good PR. I mean, I don't know. Just a millionaire golfer, you know, if he's paid $75,000 or not, whatever. But I think my point was this. Jay Monahan was like, guys, we need everybody on board here. Like this, it's not so much a health disaster in the sense of that like hundreds of players are all going to test positive. But if we go on as we are, where we appear not to be taking COVID as seriously as we should, we risk really jeopardizing the future of the PGA Tour for the rest of the year and into next year. And I think, or my impression was, is that at least the bulk of the players went, oh, he's not messing around. We should actually, And they made all the right noises. They said all the right things. And the show goes on.
Yeah, the interesting question is if they'll have fans at Memorial in 2 weeks' time. McIlroy, by the way, is taking 2 weeks off, so he should be at Memorial in Ohio. He failed to manage a top 10 across the last 3 weeks. Too many mistakes, too many bogeys, too many loose shots, he said. I've been frustrated on the course the last 3 weeks. Not being sort of in contention sucks going off in the middle of the pack on a Sunday, knowing that you don't really have a chance. So
he lost five strokes to the field in approach shots over the 3 days, so the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Travelers, which is unparalleled for him. This is like one of the best iron players in the world. To lose five strokes to the field in approaches was just clearly, as he said, he's just like, look, whatever, too many mistakes.
Bit of rust.
Driving was good, though.
Yeah, in some ways, I these last 3 weeks would bother me less or would register with me less when it comes to McIlroy than pre-COVID, where he's in contention a lot and not winning. You know, anyone can have a bad little run. You're out of contention. Your adrenaline goes down. You're just not in the hunt. It's one of those weeks. I'd actually, in a perverse way, you'd criticize him personally. Or be less worried, criticize him isn't the word. You'd be less worried in some ways about a 3 week stretch where he's just not playing well, as opposed to him not winning when he is playing well. I don't think, Peter, there's any even medium terms here about, you know, McIlroy will be making top tens and in contention again very soon, I would think.
Yeah, I'd, you know, he'd probably work on it this week and next week and go to the Memorial pretty fresh and, you know, more dialed in than he has been. So we'll wait and see. Memorial suits him. He normally plays well around there. Jack's tournament. So, let's wait and see. That's my political answer. How about that?
I'm just getting memories of, prove to me you're world number one, Rory, and spinning on the ground.
Yeah. You told me to ease off, so I have to.
So there we are. That is pretty much us up to date on the world of golf at the moment. It would seem as well increasingly that all the leagues are, that the Ryder Cup is going to be cancelled. It's been a funny one because these keep leaking out and then they're always, there's a rebuttal, but then the stories keep leaking out again and increasingly. I saw Ian Carter on the BBC amongst those saying it does look like it is going to be cancelled and all the players come out and say they want to postpone as well.
Yeah, but even more, I heard, was it Faldo or one of the guys on the American commentary Faldo saying it like it was absolutely cancelled?
Yeah, Faldo like, said it as if he had heard, you know?
He's exactly, yeah.
Well, of course, there's no Ryder Cup this year. He said it like in a...
Just... yeah, as in, like, it's something we all know and it's just a fact. Yeah, it's...
That's a real Harrington one, isn't it? Luke is going to be my... My Ryder Cup captains are big, sir.
Yeah.
Vice captains, wasn't it?
Yeah, they'll just have to rejig the schedule apparently next year, but it'll be fine, I'm sure.
The Olympics meant to go into next year as well.
They are next year, yeah. Yeah.
Busy year of sport, 2021. Yeah.
Gents, I think we're pretty much done, unless there's any whopping brilliant pieces of insight you want to throw our way from the week that was.
No.
No, I followed this guy. I don't know whether anybody else follows him on Twitter. Is you know that Monday qualifier in the States? So every Monday they have this qualifying either for the Corn Ferry Tour or for the PGA Tour, and it's fascinating to, you know, see the scores that guys are shooting with maybe only one spot available for for the tournaments, and they pitch up for one round and then head back, and they could be traveling. Whatever, flying in for one day, coming back. It just goes to show you how tough it is out there.
I presume the scores are unbelievably good.
Oh, 64 and you're not mapped.
Yeah. That's got to... Yeah. It's the reason why professional golf is the filthiest of all professional sports to pursue. It's just maybe tennis, but I can't think of anything worse.
Yeah, people don't realize it, Fionn, and they need to see how many other pros are out there trying to chase the dream.
I've just on the Irish terms, I've met a few of them, and who are Yeah, it's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking.
And that type of golf where it's one day, basically you have to go for every shot. You have to go for broke. It has to be driver. It has to be every par 5 and 2. And you kind of can't miss a putt.
Nope. No lineup.
Yeah. I caddied for a player qualifying for the British Open 15 years ago. And he played okay, but like he didn't really, his game wasn't there that day. And he knew it on the fourth hole. So he had to play the remaining like 14 holes, just kind of like doing his best, but not, you know, not believing, not the energy wasn't there. And it really is. It's a very it's really dispiriting. And on one hole, it was in Baltre, on one hole, like I wish I could remember the Swedish guy that he was playing with, his like in the group, who, and the player I was caddying for was a big hitter. Like he hit it like whatever, 290 off the tee and on links. But I'm not kidding. On a couple of holes, the Swedish guy must have been 60 yards past him. It was shocking. I was just like, oh my God. Oh my God. Really, it would absolutely be enough to I think you're very depressed.
Yes. The margins are too fine. They're too horrific. By the way, and this is an esoteric enough point. So I was playing around the other day and I'm looking for clarification here. You know the way, so the holes now are pretty, they're kind of, they're full
they
up.
They have that thing, that raised thing, so it doesn't go in.
Yeah, the white plastic to stop it going in. So the ball went in, pretty much hit the plastic thing and then came out again. And I don't know, like, even without the plastic thing, sometimes you've seen a ball almost lip in and slingshot out or come out again. And we weren't sure if the rule is now, and this, you know, because we're back to competitions, if it touches that white plastic thing and comes out, is that just in or does it have to stay in the hole? Is that just the rule? It
has to stay in the hole.
Yeah, that struck me as the most clean cut rule either. Like maybe it's more likely to bounce out because of that white plastic thing now, but it struck me as tough luck that actually the only way to adjudicate this fairly is if it stays in the hole.
Yeah, but look, I think by now they should have, it's got to the stage where, you know, you can take the flag out. Well, it should be at that stage now. Sure, everybody's in shops and restaurants and stuff like that. It should be at the stage where you're able to take the flag in and out.
Yeah, maybe.
It seems or like not have this silly thing in the hole.
Needless risk, though.
But how would you negotiate that? Like when you have, you know, 120 people potentially putting their hands on the flag.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think we're at that stage.
No.
We can't are they putting masks on in shops over in the UK, Fionn?
Where I am in Manchester. Yeah, kind of, but not really. No.
We're not doing it at all.
No, my wife teaches in Gorton in East Manchester, which is a pretty kind of tough part of the city. But the way they wear masks there, and you know, for those watching on YouTube, you'll see it there. So the mask is here and then just sits underneath your chin. Mm. So the top of the mask comes to just below your lower lip. And then they wear it kind of like this and they just walk around like, and everywhere you go, I would say, just anecdotally speaking, just based on my own observations. Now, I hasten to add, I calculated today, I haven't gone further than 5 miles from my house since the 1st of March. And I noticed that, no, the vast majority of people aren't wearing masks. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not. And I need to even be more conscious of it. Like, I've gone into a shop twice in the last week and I was like, I forgot the mask. But like you look around, I'd say 1 in 10. I don't know what you're seeing around Dublin, Peter. I'd say 1 in 10 in an average shop might have a mask. I just haven't.
Less than that. It's, I tell you, in the driving range, it's 1 in 100.
Yeah, because I didn't want to say it, but I was actually thinking I should have worn it in your driving range because that first stage is it's an indoor shop. It's a shop,
and then you walk outdoor, you know, the bays that are covered, you're majority of the time you're in the open.
Yeah.
So it's not any closed confined area. But as you walk through the shop, the information that is given is or your you're advised to wear a mask, as if you were going into any of the retail outlets of, where, you know, or shopping for groceries. But what I don't get is, well, two things is one is the bus, anybody on public transport. Why aren't they stopped getting onto the bus if they don't have a mask?
Yeah. And but who's going to do the stopping? That's the problem. The enforcement. Huh?
Just don't take the fare.
Yeah, but that's a lot to ask a bus driver to do, who might have, you know, someone can respond very aggressively, going, I need to get here and you can, blah, 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 blah. Here's my money, you can go away. Well, I think the issue in Italy, for instance, I was talking to my man, my mom is in Italy, like you can't go into any shop. It's illegal not to wear a mask under pain of a fine.
Right.
So if the police see you, there's a, whatever it is, a 200 euro fine or something like that, potentially. When you have it, as we strongly suggest, or the issue in the UK and in Ireland, my read is that it's the lack of enforce or the lack of clarity or leaving it up to people's personal responsibility might seem a noble thing in absolute terms, where we, you know, the better angels of our nature are relied upon to do the right thing for the community. But fact of the matter is that, like, you don't go fast on the motorway, not because it's dangerous, but because the speed limits are there and you might get clocked. That's human nature. And so the lack of an actual rule under penalty of fine means that a lot of people aren't going to, you know, they're just going to go, oh, it's fine or whatever, big deal.
Well, no? as I understand it now, it's mandatory. It is a rule on public transport, and then it's
on public transport, yes,
encouraged in the shops. But even anecdotally, driving by some buses, I wouldn't say we're a full house of masks, you know.
I literally haven't seen more than 3 passengers on a bus since end of February.
We're starting to fill up that bit more now. Things are semi-normal around town.
Oh yeah, well, sure. Look at here, we're turning our back in the UK on the air corridors. We're just going to have a list of 75 countries that we can all travel to, but Ireland will be one of them. But they don't want people from the UK right now. I don't blame them.
Don't take it personally.
I don't, but it breaks my heart because I want nothing more than to come home and see friends and play some golf. So I'll have to wait a little longer.
Well, hopefully not too long. Fellas, we'll leave it there. We'll talk next week. Enjoy the golf over the weekend. Peter Laurie, thank you. Fionn Davenport, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Oh, wow! In your life, have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Suck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. If they are, show up. Of course you want to play at the weekend.